And now it does give me great pleasure to introduce our speaker this evening, Kathy Beanfield.
As I said, I'm Kathy, and I am an alcoholic.
Hey, Kathy.
And thank you, Jesse, for inviting me to tell my story tonight. I'm grateful to tell it. It's been a heck of a week as I've been thinking of how to prepare for it. It's been quite the week. I haven't done this in 20 years. And, I really don't know how, so I don't know. But I wanted to start with a favorite prayer of mine. Lord, I'm yours. Whatever the cost may be, may your will be done in my life. I realize I'm not here on earth to do my own thing or to seek my own fulfillment or my own glory. I'm not here to indulge my desires, to increase my possessions, to impress people, to be popular, to prove I'm somebody important, or to promote myself. I'm not here even to be relevant or successful by human standards. I'm here to please you. I offer myself to you, for you are worthy. All that I am or hope to be, I owe to you. I'm yours by creation, and every day I receive from you life and breath and all things. Thy will be done. So, what it was like. Well, I have a twin sister, and we were born into the Air Force. My dad was in the military, and for the next 18 years, we traveled around. We, about every two or three years, we moved. Our parents were alcoholic, and their parents' parents, our grandparents were alcoholic too. And we, over the course of the 18 years, we moved out of the country a couple of times. We lived in England, and I graduated from high school there on an Air Force base. As a kid, I hated leaving my friends all the time, and I also hated being the new kid in school. And as an adult, I look back on it as a wonderful adventure, and I'm really grateful for it. You know, it wasn't a traumatic childhood, and all of our physical needs were met, but our parents were preoccupied, you know, with their disease of alcoholism. And I'm sure they didn't learn, you know, from their parents either. And so our emotional needs were not met. I realize today, and AA has helped to teach me, that you cannot give something that you don't have. My dad was angry, and he was emotionally abusive. He was critical and insensitive. I was very afraid of him, and I felt like I never measured up in his eyes. And interesting that I grew up being that way with him. He called us kids an ugly name when we did something wrong. Shit ass. He told me I was too stupid for him to help me with my math homework when I was in fifth grade, and that he would be wasting his time. He said we were all mistakes. So these were the messages that I got as a child, and it's not surprising that I felt crappy, and I felt like I was stupid, and I felt like I was unwanted, and I just felt like I didn't know anything, you know, and I wasn't worth anything. I couldn't talk about how lousy I felt, so I started to draw inside myself, and I felt invisible, and I wanted to be invisible. I stopped trying to do schoolwork, and I didn't get good grades in school. Neither did I pursue any hobbies or sports. And food became a coping mechanism for me. I started to have a weight problem in my teens. I never remember not being afraid. My twin sister and I had twin beds. Every night I would end up in her bed, every single night, because I was afraid. I developed performance anxiety and hated to be called on to get up in front of the class. I wanted to be a normal kid and be able to do what the other kids were doing, but I was just bound by fear. When I was 16, I went to my first beer party, and I got loaded on one beer. And I don't know if everybody in the room knows what the game Spin the Bottle is, but we were playing that game, and I got to kiss the cute popular boy. I never would have done that had I not been loaded on that beer. And that was just powerful to me. It's like, oh, I can do things that I'm afraid to do if I have a drink. And that began my 35-year drinking career. Alcohol became my solution to not fitting in, and it changed me from being an edgy person to someone who was funny and with a personality. And it gave me courage to do things I didn't want to do. Later, it became my friend, my God, my taskmaster as I became a slave to it. I started hanging out with the partiers, and my drinking at that point was parties on the weekend only. I went from being a docile, compliant daughter to a belligerent, angry teenager. I got a job as a waitress on the weekends at an NCO club on the Air Force Base where I lived. And I never missed work. It was Saturday and Sunday morning. I had to be there at 7, breakfast and lunch. Never missed work, but I often skipped school on Monday because I was tired, because I went partying after work. I became a real challenge to my parents. I told my dad to keep his cheap allowance. I said, I can buy my own clothes. And I can wear what I want too, right? So I drank to get drunk always. It was never just one for me or even two. I had blackouts early on. One winter when we were living in England and there was even snow on the ground, I apparently was in a blackout and I walked home from a party without my shoes. I had to go back and get my shoes. Of course, I didn't know where they were. But my sister would sneak me into the house so that my parents wouldn't see that something was wrong with me. And she would clean me up when I had vomit on me. I was going to a high school on another Air Force base because our base didn't have one. And so we stayed there for the week and came home on the weekends. And I went AWOL my senior year. I just up and left. I didn't tell anybody where I was going. I took a train home. And the reason why I did this was because I didn't want to give an oral report in English class. So I was just going to quit. That was my answer. Just have a drink or quit. So my dad wasn't happy about that, and he dragged me back the next day. I was really angry at him for that. I barely graduated. I'm really grateful to my dad today. That, you know, that was good parenting. You know, he did something good there. I got married at 20, and I was relying more and more on alcohol by this time. But I still didn't drink daily. In fact, I never was a daily drinker. And so I never had to detox. That's a yet. I was a periodic binge drinker. And once I had the first drink, it was over. I just had to drink until it was gone or until I was, you know, really drunk or maybe even blacked out. I was starting to need a drink to do things I was afraid to do, which was everything. I had a job in a department store and had a drink in my locker. I'm very ashamed of this, by the way, that I couldn't even go to work without having something to drink if I needed it. And the boss did catch me doing that. Now, she saw me, you know, as I was taking that sip out of that bottle, and I knew by the look on her face that she knew what I was doing. She didn't call me on it, but right after that, I, you know, quit that job. I felt, you know, the sickness came on. Something's wrong. I can't go to work. I told my husband I can't go to work. So for 2 years, I stayed home, and I drank even more. So my world got pretty small because I got to the point where I was even afraid to even go out of the house sometimes at that point. And I didn't have any children with him. And I left him and I went back home to live. And, you know, what could I expect? I'm an alcoholic. He wasn't. You know, our marriage didn't survive that. But anyway, I went back home and I got a job as a cocktail waitress. This was a job that, you know, was right up my alley. I met my boyfriend, Matt, whom I was very in love with and spent 7 years with. He was an alcoholic. Again, you know, this is up my alley. He did a lot of bar hopping, and I wasn't always invited, but I really spent about 7 years chasing him around in bars, you know, going to the places where I knew he would be. And after 7 years of living with him, thinking that he was the problem, I left, and I got my first place on my own. That was, I was 31 years old. Without any, no, I was a little younger than that. No, I was around 31. Without anyone watching, my drinking really picked up as well. More blackouts, and I started to experience incomprehensible demoralization as, you know, the blackouts were multiple days. So, what happened? This is what happened. Well, I hated who I saw in the mirror. I hated who I was on the inside. I couldn't stand myself. I was overweight. Cigarette smoking caused me to have stained teeth. I was turning into someone I never wanted to be, which was my mother. My mother was alcoholic. She was obese, and she had agoraphobia, which is a social, anxiety. And she didn't go out a lot, and she didn't do a lot of things. Well, I had an anxiety disorder. I knew that. And I was so ashamed of it. I didn't want to be my mother. I was heading in her direction. You know, I was gaining weight. Anyway, I made a decision, and this was at 31, to get help and not counseling. I got counseling. So instead of going to AA, truthfully, I didn't really know people that went. I didn't know a lot about it. I'm sure I'd heard of it. But I had gone for a lot of counseling here and there. Lots of times I was drinking when I went. But no, I was seriously going to stop drinking, and I went to a counselor. I took Anabuse for a couple of months. And, you know, the counselor said, you need to go to AA. I went to one or two meetings, and I didn't think it was for me. You know, I really didn't think I was that bad, I guess, you know, because I, you know, didn't have to have that drink early in the morning, and I wasn't drinking daily. So what I did was I white-knuckled it, and I did it my way. And my way was clean myself up, you know. I felt really dirty, and I was just going to clean myself up, and I was just going to reinvent myself. I was going to do it myself. I started running, you know. I started eating healthier. I quit smoking. By the way, I quit smoking and drinking at the same time. You know, the counselor didn't recommend that. But I was disgusted by that habit, you know. And I lost 20 pounds right away. I started going to college. I said, you know what, I'm a cocktail waitress. That's what I did. And I knew that wasn't going to work if I wanted to give up drinking. So I started going to community college to prepare to go to a university to be a dietitian. That'll teach me how to eat so I won't look like my mother. Well, I had a new boyfriend, and I moved in with him. He was not alcoholic. So that was a good change too, right? I was making some better choices. College was the hardest thing I ever did. And no alcohol to cope, whoa, it was really, really hard. I admittedly slipped a few times, but not bad though. I broke up with Bill my last semester, and you know that I had, you know, we had been together for, let's see, about 6 years, and we had lived together for about 4 years. But I didn't realize how hard that was going to hit me, you know, and I was the one that wanted the breakup. Well, I did turn to alcohol my last semester, and I had a few, you know, drunks going on there. But, you know, I got back to my white-knuckling at it and finished college, which I did very well. That was a miracle. That was truly a miracle. And I landed my first job. I was recruited right from college. The day after I graduated, I started my new job. Well, I didn't feel like I was a professional, you know. I still felt like a drunk. And I was a drunk, right? I was a dry drunk, but sometimes I wasn't a dry drunk. So I was just overcome with fear. And I felt that way all the time. And always was having that compulsion to drink. You know, white-knuckling it is not fun. But I really was able to stay sober for about a year and a half, white-knuckling it. And I moved out of state. I had been living in Connecticut, and I moved to Syracuse for this new job. Instead of going to AA, I went to Adult Children of Alcoholic meetings. And you know what? I had friends there. I did social things with them. I could talk. I had a sponsor even. And so that, you know, that was helpful, but there were also some friends in that group that were alcoholic, and they were telling me I should probably go to AA. So I was doing well at work with all that fear. I was showing up, going to work. Man, this was hard stuff for me. And I got a promotion. I didn't feel I deserved it, and I sought counseling. And I said, I really need to just decompress. And so I did have an anxiety disorder, but I was too afraid to drink. I was too afraid that I would lose that job, you know. So the career, the college education ended up really is what drew me to AA. I had something I wanted. I liked what I did, and I didn't want to lose it. And I had worked 6 years, you know, to get there. Well, this counselor refused to work with me anymore until I addressed my alcohol problem. And I'm like, what? I hardly ever drink, you know. I didn't realize that that's just the symptom. So I didn't think that was my problem. I knew I had problems, but I didn't think it was that. Well, one night, I went to the hospital in an ambulance. I called an ambulance. I lived alone, and I had this severe gut pain in the middle of the night. And it was in the emergency room. They said it was called a gut spasm, and it was caused by stress. And the doctor told me I had to de-stress. So this time, it was Labor Day weekend, 27 years ago, and I went to a restaurant to have myself a nice meal. I was going home the next day to Connecticut. It was a 6-hour drive, and I was just doing a little celebrating, you know. And, you know, you're doing good. You haven't lost your job yet. I always felt like I was going to get fired. You know, they were going to find out who I really was. I really didn't know what I was doing. And, I went out for this nice meal and, you know, to kick off my Labor Day weekend. I had no intentions of drinking. Well, there were some guys at a table next to mine that were offering to buy me drinks. I said no several times. Then the third time, I caved in. Well, I got very drunk. Very, very drunk that night. And I even stopped on the way home and got beer to take home and drink. And I was so hungover. That was the worst job. And you know what really scared me? Was somebody at the table knew my boss. This was a very small town. You know, I mean really small, like 12,000. And I worked at the hospital, and everybody knew you. I would see these people in the grocery store. And this guy at the table knew my boss. And I was just scared to death that I was going to get found out. Terrible, terrible drive home. But that's when, you know, I was at step one there. I knew that I was powerless over alcohol and that my life was unmanageable. And so, my family's alcoholic. I went Labor Day weekend. They're all drinking. I didn't drink. Even my mother, you know, she's drinking too, you know. But when I got home from that weekend, I ran to an AA meeting. And I've never had the compulsion to drink since then. So I wish I could say that I did what I was told to do there. I didn't drink, but I didn't follow directions. I had not been in a relationship since I left Bill, and I needed one. You know, I needed someone to finally love me the way I wanted to be loved. And I met him at an AA meeting. His name was Dennis, and he was new too. We were both new. So we decided to have a relationship instead of getting sponsors, you know, so, and work steps. And so, you know, and after dating for a little while. Then he was living in the area. He moved for a while. We had a long-distance relationship. And then he got a job in Palo Alto and said, I want you to come to California. I'm not going to come unless you come. And so I got a transfer with my job, and I went there. Well, this was a disaster living with this man. I hadn't lived with him. We were dating, and you know, and I'm sure that it was a disaster for him too, because you know, my sponsor I eventually got said, "Ooh, two self-willed people living together. Ooh, ooh." Anyway, it was a real disaster. We fought all the time, and I got myself in a real situation there because, you know, the pay that I was making when I left, well, for one thing, I was without a job for about 3 months. I was on a leave of absence while I looked for a job. It wasn't that easy to find a job, so I didn't have a lot of money. And I lived with him for 10 months, and when I got a job, I was still really kind of not that high up the rank with my company. And they were paying me, you know, like New York wages. Boom, California, Bay Area. I couldn't find a place to live, right? And so I was just really in a situation there. Well, that's when I ran to the women's meetings. And I got a sponsor, this great woman. Her name was Bee. And she was so lovely, and she was so great. And she called me on my stuff, you know? She told me the truth about myself. And, you know, she knew I was in a situation. She said, "Hey, you know, I'll let you stay here one night, you know, if you need to. But after that, you're going to have to pay me $550 a month for a room." So, but I loved these women, the women's meeting that I was going to. And these women, you know, I was able to talk there. And the fellowship was great. And we would go to the Good Earth restaurant. Has anybody ever been there and drink that great tea? And so that was really great. And one, I was complaining about not having any money all the time because I didn't have any, right? I had no money saved, you know. I was never good at that. And this woman gave me $20 to take myself to the movies. And I thought that was so nice that she did that. I'll never forget that. But God provided a way out. I ended up getting a promotion with my company and moving to Lake Arrowhead. And so I told Dennis that I was leaving. You know, that, and where I was going, he said, "Oh, I think I'll come with you." I said, "You're not invited," you know. And, oh, he was so, so mad. And, you know, I mean, he really went into a rage, and I was a little bit afraid. Nothing happened to me, but I really should have taken my sponsor up on that offer. I really should have. When I finally left and the movers came, I grabbed my cat and my purse, and I ran to the car and slammed on the gas to get out of town. That's how mad Dennis was. Whew! But he didn't. He knew where I was going, but he didn't know where I lived. But I went to Lake Arrowhead, and you know, I clicked right into AA there. I ran to AA. I just really needed it, of course. And I got a sponsor right away, and I really liked the fellowship there. You know, it was a small town. And I learned how to ski. I always wanted to ski and was always too afraid. In sobriety, I learned how to ski. And my sponsor skied, and we would go skiing together, and we'd go with other friends from AA. It was a lot of fun. I really enjoyed that time. And then my work took me to Pasadena, where I didn't know anyone again. I'm always in these situations where I don't know anyone. But you know what? It was just like being the military brat, really. You know, moving to new places where I didn't know the kids. So I guess I was kind of used to that. But I clicked right into AA in Santa Maria, too. And I was kind of sketchy with a sponsor. You know, I kind of held on to the one I had, but she was a little far away. And I got another one. It didn't work out. But I was doing service there. I was involved in that Los Angeles H&I. That is a huge H&I. They are hundreds. Have you gone? There are hundreds of people in the meeting. And they go, "Okay, we need somebody to go to the psych center," you know, and somebody would raise their hand, you know. And I took a meeting into a psych center, into a youth authority. I sponsored a gal in prison at Stockton for vehicular manslaughter. And that was, I'd never done that, you know, and it was really neat. It was really neat. My job took me here to Santa Maria with my company. I had a job here. And again, didn't know anybody here, never had been to Santa Maria. And I ran to AA. I went to the podium meeting. I went to the Lion's Den. You know, I was kind of slacking off though, because you know what? I was on my career path now. I was like becoming a workaholic. I really had been a workaholic. for a long time, but that was taking more precedence. It was a hard job. It was really a hard job, and it was a difficult job. And so I was doing more of that. I had Peggy Miller as a sponsor for a while, and I wasn't a very good sponsee, you know. And so anyway, I was starting to slack off. And so I was 18. I was it was 18 years ago when I moved here. I was 8 years sober. So my company lost the account that I was working at here. It was Santa Maria High School. I was a consulting dietitian there. And so I found a new job. God was so good to me. He provided me this great job in Lompoc. And, you know, it was more money and everything, you know, pension. It was really, really great. God has really been good to me. And AA, too. And I was going to talk about my spiritual awakening later. But anyway, I stopped going to meetings altogether. For 14 years, I didn't go to meetings. What I did was the job was very, very difficult, you know, very kind of grueling. And I should have been going to meetings. I didn't drink. But for 14 years, I was white-knuckling it again. And it's a miracle that I didn't drink. I did have a spiritual program, though. I had a spiritual awakening. It was in Pasadena, working steps with my sponsor. She said, get on your knees and pray to God, right? Well, I didn't know God, and I did that, and I felt like I was praying to a wall, you know. But I would walk by this church every day in Pasadena. I'd go on this walk around town every single day. And one day, after about 2 years, God called me into that church and met me inside. And I was overwhelmed with emotion. I cried. I felt His forgiveness. I felt His love. And I started going to that church, and I surrendered my life to Christ there at that church. Actually, it was like a recommitment, because I had done it when I was 10 years old, when a family in New Mexico invited me and my sister to a church. And then we moved on, and I found alcohol after that. But I did dig into my spiritual program in this church. I went to everything for new Christians and Bible studies and everything. And then I ended up coming here to, you know, to Santa Maria. So I did realize, though, that alcohol is only a symptom of the disease, right? It's a progressive disease, and alcohol is only the symptom. And I started pulling into myself over this 14 years of not coming to meetings. I was kind of limping along, kind of just getting by. It was just, you know, really can't be that caught up in one dimension of your life, you know. My job was my life. I'm single. I never remarried. I hadn't even had a boyfriend in a long time. I have no children. And it was my life. It was my identity. And I just felt like I was powerless over everything. You know, I was just full of fear all the time. Again, full of fear. You know, health problems. I had cancer a few times, leukemia, acute leukemia. I was struggling with depression, and I was still going to church, and I was still going to Bible study, but I wasn't going to AA, and I am an alcoholic, and that's what I should have been doing. There was a crisis 2 years ago in my family. My twin sister lost her son to the disease. He was a heroin addict. He was 39 years old, and it was last week, 2 years ago. And I went home to help her with that, you know, support her. And, I had so much anxiety. I didn't know what to do to help her. I was just overwhelmed. I was overwhelmed with how our whole family was reacting to his death, even me. There was a lot of drinking going on, you know. And I couldn't sleep. I was there for a week. I couldn't sleep. And when I came home, I couldn't sleep either. And so I had some Percocet in the cupboard. I took one, you know, and I was able to sleep. And then I just ran to meetings. I started going to Al-Anon too. I started going to AA and Al-Anon. And, you know, maybe I could have to admit that I've lost my sobriety date. I've talked to a few people about this, but I had one Percocet, and Anyway, I have to admit that I did that. And, okay, spiritual awakening I talked about. Yeah, God is definitely doing for me what I cannot do for myself. You know, I could not show up for my life. You know, I couldn't go to work or get that education. You know, I couldn't do any of these things. You know, and God helped me do these. God is just powerful. What he can do in a person's life when he just overtakes you. I am totally inadequate except for, you know, my adequacy, which is God, you know, and I hate being inadequate because, you know what, I want to be God. I want to be powerful like him. I don't want to be afraid. I want to know everything, but it's never going to happen. And so I just have to surrender to just being me, you know, and not complain about the great life that he gives me. I mean, really, I shouldn't be here. You know, I am a walking, talking miracle. I just need to get out of his way, you know, so that he can use me. So what is it like now? I have a great sponsor. She is here. And, you know, I wanted what she had. You know, when I first met her, she talked about having issues with her father that have healed. I have so many issues with my father. And I love the guy. I love this man. And you know what? He lives in California. He lives in Southern California. He and my mom got divorced. She lives in Connecticut and he lives here. And I wanted to have a good relationship with him because I love him. But you know what? He and I are just alike. We really are. You know, and we rub on each other. I rub on him and he rubs on me. And a few people in the room met him. He was here for a birthday party. Yeah, he's really something. And anyway, and he is a charming man, but when he's angry and when he is running on the high side of his bipolar, I want to kill him. And he's also alcoholic, and he still drinks, too. So, I like that she's getting me out of myself, you know, because I'm just so into myself. And it's hard to go into a room, even an AA meeting, and walk around and meet people. I'm afraid. I hate to say it. I'm still afraid. I'm still that little girl, you know, years ago, that, you know, I was stupid, you know, I was unwanted. I was, you know, called yucky names. I still feel that way a lot. I still feel like I have to, you know, knock people's socks off, you know, to have somebody notice me. But I am a Christian, and I feel terrible saying that because I am a Christian. I really do have strong faith. But I like that she's getting me out of myself and prompting me to things that I need to do. Okay, there's a newcomer. Go get her phone number. Okay, are you going to the meeting? You know, she checks in with me a lot, and she reaches out to me. That's good because I'm not a good reacher outer. You know, I'm, you know, digging into myself. I've been working steps with her. I'm on step 10 now. And she shares the truth about herself, you know, when I'm telling her the sordid stories, you know, and the fourth step, oh, sordid stories. And she shares truth back, and so I feel like, oh, okay, I'm not alone. Somebody else did those things too. And she cares about me, and I care about her. And I love the people that I'm meeting in these rooms, the friendships that I've developed. And, you know, when I was kind of new coming, I was about 3 months here, I had a detached retina. And I, you know, had these treatments, and for, I don't know, it was about 5 weeks, actually 6 weeks, I wasn't even supposed to drive because I couldn't see. And a friend, I go to church in Arroyo Grande, and I asked a friend to take me to church in Santa Maria, and I ran into somebody I knew from AA, Mary Ann, in a Bible study there at Sunday school class. And I look back, and there she is. Hi! Can you get me a ride Friday night? And she did. And so we became friends, and that was just great. I just love the people here. I love it. I love the program. I love the steps. I am doing what I'm told today. You know, I might procrastinate a little, but I'm doing it. I am mending my relationships. you know, I worked those steps, you know, in the 8th and the 9th. And I was in Connecticut last month, and I looked at the, you know, my list before I went, and I said, you know, I prayed about it. God, I want to make some amends to these people. My mother and my sister, I ended up making amends to. Well, one of my sisters, my twin sister, I was staying with her. And so I had that opportunity to make that amend to her. And my mother was a little hard, you know, but we had this opportunity where we were alone at lunch. My brother didn't want to come, and I said, well, it's now or never. And I told her I was sorry about something that I had said to her. And what it was, and I felt, I always thought about this, and I felt terrible about it. And I finally told her I was sorry for it. I was in college, and I was overwhelmed and always complaining, you know, whining all the time about it. And she said, Kathy, why don't you just marry Bill? Quit college and marry Bill. And that was not what I wanted to hear. And truthfully, I wanted to marry Bill, but he didn't want to marry me. And I said this awful thing to her, Mom, I don't want to be a maid like you. And I said, Mom, do you remember when I said that? And she said, yeah. And I told her, I said, you know what? I'm sorry I said that. I said, I didn't know any better. I said, I'm a different person today. And I know that what you do doesn't make you who you are. And I just want to, I'm going to cry. I just want to tell you that I admire you so much. Because, you know, I told you that she had this anxiety disorder. And when my dad left, she was 50 years old and she had never worked. And she had to go to work. And she hadn't graduated from high school. You know, she left, I think it was maybe 10th grade. And I knew that was so hard for her. And she did end up giving up drinking, but she didn't go to AA. She did it on her own. And she was such a hard worker, you know, and she was their best employee. And I said, I'm so proud of you. And it was so great to do that. And our conversation, you know, after that was just so much more intimate, you know. And my phone conversations with her now, long distance, are different too. And then my dad, when he was here for his birthday, I am now what I'm doing, and Al-Anon is teaching me, I am listening with my heart, you know, and trying to love these people and have compassion on my father with his mental illness and his aging process. He's 88. Hey, I'm getting there. You know what? I'm starting to have problems now myself. And you know what? I'm having more compassion. And, but, you know, I know it must not be fun, you know, being bipolar. And he wasn't coming to see me because I wouldn't let him because he wasn't safe to drive. And I would go see him. He says, I want to come to your house for my birthday. And it was August. And I said, no, you know, I don't think it's safe. And then I was meditating on God's word, a love verse in Corinthians, and pow, God said, you have to go get him and bring him. And it's like, oh no. But I just redid my yard. I spent a lot of money on that, and his dog is going to come and going to ruin my yard, and the dog's going to hurt my cat, and blah, blah, blah. But anyway, I did it. I called Dad right away, and I said, Dad, I want you to come to my house. I'm going to come and get you. And so I went down, and it was the day of his birthday that I went. I took him out for a lobster dinner. That's what he wanted. And then the next day, I brought him to my house. I invited a few friends from AA. We celebrated his birthday. And I was so glad I did it. And the day that I took him back home, I took him up to Cambria, Ragged Point. Oh, we had a great time. And then the day that he left, I made an amend to him in general. For just all the things, you know, the how difficult I was, how obnoxious I was, how I mean, just a lot of stuff. I just made, you know, amends, and his eyes got watery. Yeah, and it was really great, you know. But he was back to his old self on the way home, criticizing my driving. Blah, blah, blah. And I just let it go. But no, I didn't let it go. I said, Dad. I'm not a doormat. You know, I said it in a nice voice. I'm learning how to do that. Detach in love is what Al-Anon calls that. So, anyway, how do I stay sober? I hang with the winners, you know, people I know in my church that are winners, that, you know, are godly people that I feel good about. I hang with the winners here in AA. And I give back. You know, I need to do more service, but I was just secretary at a meeting for a year that just ended, and that was great service. And you know what? That grew me, and it made me feel good. And I can't tell you the number of times I didn't want to go and show up for that, but I went, and I met Nate there, and Nate was my co, and he was great. Just met a lot of great people there, and I was reaching out to people being the secretary, you know, and I'm, you know, I haven't sponsored anybody, not in a long time, and so I am open to sponsoring, and so, you know, so when somebody asks, I will say yes. I do work the steps, like I told you. Time with God. I spend a lot of time with God in the morning. It is critical for me to get centered in God. And I have a sanctuary area on my sofa that I listen to Christian music on Pandora. And I meditate on God's word. And I write in my journal. And I would like to actually read something that I wrote in my journal. It was a letter to God. Let's see. I'm going to end with this. There's a couple of things I wrote. This was on September 19th. It is well with my soul. God, you are amazing. You help me to rise out of my isms and give me joy, peace, and hope. I am changing, slowly but surely. Yesterday, I was able to tackle a small section of my garden and not be overwhelmed with a whole yard. I was able to open my mouth at a meeting and share some good stuff about what working my AA program has done in me and the positive effect I am able to transfer to my family and give you the glory. I was able to go to my first GSR meeting, that was Al-Anon, and not be afraid because I didn't know everything. I was able to have a nice conversation with Dad this morning about a healthy habit he is practicing that he said he learned from me. Thank you for using me, Lord. Please bring more of that on. And then this morning I wrote, awoke at 4 a.m. Yeah, I haven't done that in a while. You know, this doing this really got me kind of worked up, you know, having to do this. The word surrender filled my mind. I think God wants that to be the main theme for my pitch. I'm not sure I did it. God drew me outside to meet him under the starry host. I noticed the constellations were still there. I haven't been out there in a long time, sitting in my yard, looking up at the sky. You know, I would do this in the middle of the night when I was working. By the way, I just retired 3 months ago. But I would do that all the time because I was just had a lot of fear, and I would go out in the middle of the night and just look, okay, the constellations are still in the right place. God, you have not gone away. You're there. I saw a satellite moving. You know, that's something you see moving that's not blinking. It's a satellite. It was moving slowly. I saw a shooting star this morning. I'm not sure I've even seen one in California. I used to see them in Western New York all the time. And I felt one with God, and I sent up prayers for my pitch. And for all who came to mind. Thank you for letting me share.
All right. Let's have another round of applause for Kathy.